Welcome to the Life and Legacy Show, where we discuss all things elder law, estate, and legacy planning. Hosted by certified elder law attorney Tim Seckler from the Seckler Law Firm. And now your host, attorney Tim Seckler.
Hey, and welcome to this week's edition of the Life and Legacy Show, sponsored by the Seckler Law Firm, where great families make great estate plans. My name is Tim Seckler. I am the owner of the Seckler Law Firm and the host of this radio show each and every week right here on Word FM in Pittsburgh. And you can also check it as a podcast anywhere you find your podcast. So if you're new to the show, what we do on the show is we give you our thoughts on how to avoid some estate planning mistakes and the different ways that we can teach you how to keep the assets that you've worked hard for rather than lose it to some crazy government rule book, et cetera. And so thanks for joining us on today's show. I need to do my little disclaimer here. You know I am a lawyer and all that you cannot make decisions based on this or any other radio show. I am a lawyer. I am not yet your lawyer. I would love to earn your work, but this is for your general information and is not to be construed as legal advice. So don't go moving things around based on what you hear on this or any other radio show. All right, got it? All right, so I thought we'd start doing something new with the radio show. And that is, at the beginning of the show, I want to start with sort of like one of the core beliefs that we have at the firm. What we have gotten from feedback is from our clients is that they understand that lawyers think about stuff a little bit differently. And what we wanted to do was sort of like start a little piece of the radio show where we teach you what we think about. Right. And I think the number one thing that I wanted to hit with the way that we do things at our law firm is that to us, you are not a transaction. Okay. So in law school, they talk about estate planning and several other types of practice areas in the law to be transactional law, meaning you hire the lawyer for a thing, the lawyer does the thing, and then that's the end of the relationship. It's my belief that estate planning, when done properly, is not a transaction. You, our clients to us, are not transactions. We look at this as a long-term relationship. And so the way that we do that, the way that we facilitate the relationship, is we have an ongoing membership program that we call our Red Wagon Club. We have a couple hundred families around Pittsburgh that are in the Red Wagon Club, and this group meets about once a month for either educational topics or some fun events. And we have this sort of whole community of people that are committed to better futures for their families. They're committed to keeping the estate plan up to date. Because, you know, with these types of estate plans, the type of work that we do, which typically transcends like the simple will, I want to get it to the kids. So, you know, we're in the asset protection business. We're in the keep the family peace business. We're in the avoid unnecessary government rule book business. And, you know, the type of law that we practice, the type of estate planning that we do, which I believe is the way to do estate planning, involves a little bit more complex planning, and it's complicated stuff, right? Now, we try real hard to teach the complicated stuff in a way that you don't need a law degree to understand it. That's why we have all these workshops that we have all the time. But we do the education, but we are committed to doing a good estate plan for our clients, and that is not quick and easy. You know, the simplest document that we could do for a family is probably not the best solution because the problems that most people face are complicated, right? And so complicated problems tend to require complicated solutions. And so what we do is we teach you about all of these things, all the wills and trusts and long-term care and taxes and all the things that you really need to know about to have a good estate plan. But because it's complicated, by its nature, this material can be perishable, right? So you may go through our series of classes and perfectly understand what we're doing in 2024, right? But if we don't talk to you and you don't talk to us and you don't come to any of our events and I see at Lowe's in 2028 and ask you to explain your estate plan to me or explain the Pennsylvania inheritance tax to me, most people are going to have a difficult time doing that because you're not in it every day. And so what we do is we have this whole year-long educational sequence, educational programs, monthly webinars, fun events, getting our clients together, newsletters, letting you know when the law changes, letting you know just sort of like reminder workshops on what you did and how you can update your documents and all of that. So all of that is included in our Red Wagon Club, and that's our commitment to our clients that you are not just a transaction. You're a relationship. We want the plan to work today, and we want the plan to work tomorrow, too. So that's a bit about how I believe this practice should go. You know, one of the biggest One of the biggest complaints that attorneys get when clients are unhappy and calling the Bar Association is that the attorney never returns my phone call. And my pledge is that is not our firm, right? Our firm probably over-communicates. Our clients probably get tired of hearing from us because we're trying to keep them on top of what's going on. So there you go. I hope that resonates with you. With our law firm, our clients are not transactions. It's a relationship. We're with you for the long haul. And we're looking forward to working with people who are that committed to their own family. Okay, so the rest of this episode, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about a couple of things that have been coming up recently. They're coming up in our estate planning workshops. They're coming up in client meetings. And I was having a conversation with Amy Reese a little bit ago, who is our managing attorney. She sort of supervises the other attorneys and the paralegals and whatnot. And I said, hey, you know, what are like sort of the top five questions that we get? What are the things that people are asking us all the time? And she gave me this list of questions. And it makes sense because they're the same questions I get when I teach these estate planning classes, the workshops. And so let's just tackle them right here. So number one is, do I need a will or do I need a trust, right? So there's a lot of confusion around this. And which is better, a will or a trust? Well, understand first that the question, which is better, a will or a trust, is a little bit like asking the question, which is better, a hammer or a screwdriver, right? One's not better than the other. It really depends on what it is that you want to accomplish. Hammers are great unless you need to back out a screw, right? They don't work very well for that. And so here's kind of my thoughts. Wills are designed primarily to answer the question, who gets my stuff when I pass away, right? Wills are not designed to avoid the probate process. Wills are not designed necessarily to save on post-death administration fees. Wills are not designed to protect assets from long-term care. They're not designed to do much tax planning. So the question about whether a will is sufficient for you really depends on what are your goals. What is it that you're looking to accomplish? And so once we teach people the things that these tools do, it's been our experience that most people would decide that maybe a will is insufficient in their situation, especially most retirees. And so then probably a lot of people decide trust, not because it's a better tool, but because they want to accomplish something that the will does not accomplish. If you've listened to the show for a long time, you get tired of me preaching about how long-term care is your biggest financial threat. And I keep screaming about it, I keep yelling about it, and maybe you're getting tired of hearing the message. But this week alone, we had five families reach out to the law firm where somebody is going broke in a nursing home. It's every week we have families calling us saying, hey, my dad was just admitted to the nursing home. What now? What now? What now? Well, you know, these problems are better solved ahead of time rather than dealing with a crisis situation. And so I will never stop telling people, you should plan for long-term care. You should plan to protect assets. You should plan for how you're going to receive your care. And so if you have the goal of some of these more lofty goals, if you have some of these more lofty goals, rather than just answering the question who gets it, but making sure they get it in a certain fashion, then maybe you consider a trust. Now, question two then is it a revocable trust or is it an irrevocable trust? Well, let's talk about these things for a little bit. So any trust is just it's like a new legal entity. Technically it's not, but it's kind of like you're creating this new legal entity, and then we're going to transfer some ownership of some stuff to be managed by the trust. The trustee of the trust is a person in control. The beneficiaries of the trust are the people who can get stuff out of the trust. They're the people who are allowed to receive distributions, for example. Those people are called beneficiaries. Now, in a revocable trust, the creator of the trust is typically the trustee and the beneficiary, which means they're in total control and they have total access. So once you set up the trust, life kind of goes back to normal. You use the money however the heck you want. So why do people use them? Well, the primary reason that people decide to use a revocable trust, and there can be several, but is to avoid probate. Which is how wills are administered once you pass away. And a lot of people have heard that probate can be time-consuming and expensive and all the rest. And it can be. It's not always terrible, but it can be. And one of the reasons that people go to a revocable trust is once I have my stuff in my trust, when I pass away, the distribution of my stuff is governed by the terms of the trust. not by the terms of the will, and therefore we avoid the courthouse and avoid the probate process. And so revocable trust can be used to avoid probate. Irrevocable trust, on the other hand, in getting into the subject matter of irrevocable trust, I need you to first understand that there are multiple types of irrevocable trusts. There are irrevocable trusts that are only used by very wealthy people for tax planning. There are irrevocable trusts that are used for special needs planning, for charitable planning, for asset protection planning. So there's lots of types of irrevocable trusts. And so once we get into the broad category of irrevocable trusts, the question is, well, what are you trying to accomplish? And then we can debate, you know, whether the use of one of these tools can make sense for your family. And this is the kind of stuff that we teach during our estate planning workshop. So if you're not familiar with our firm, we host estate planning workshops every week somewhere around town. If you go to seclerlawfirm.com, S-E-C-H-L-E-R, lawfirm.com, or go to estateplantim.com, you're going to find a tab that allows you to register for a workshop. These workshops are free. And we take an hour and 15 minutes or so to talk to you about this stuff. And then we teach you what working with our law firm looks like, which is an education-based model rather than, you know, high-pressure one-on-one sales. So check it out. Check out a workshop. I think you'll find it valuable. Most people find it pretty valuable, whether they decide to work with our law firm or not. I am very fond, getting back to the subject of irrevocable trust, I am very fond of a particular type of irrevocable trust when it comes to middle-class families. It is what we call an asset protection trust. It is designed to leave the creator of the trust with some control of the trust, but protects assets from what I believe to be the biggest threat that middle-class Americans face in retirement, and that is what happens if I get the Alzheimer's disease. What happens if I get really, really sick? Nursing homes cost $150,000 a month, and the government is failing people, right? So our government picks winners and losers based upon the healthcare event you will ultimately have. If you're over 65 and you have cancer, look, cancer is terrible. I don't want to have cancer, but the treatment associated with most types of cancer is acute in nature, you know, hospitalization, medications, surgery. Well, that's covered by Medicare if you're over 65. If I don't have cancer when I'm older, but if instead I have, say, Alzheimer's disease, well, that's not treated necessarily with surgery. That's not treated necessarily with hospitalization. That treatment tends to be long-term in nature, right? It tends to be custodial care. And Medicare doesn't pay for that. So for our seniors in this country, our government system is picking financial winners and losers based upon the healthcare event you will ultimately have, which is almost entirely outside of your control, right? So, you know, from my standpoint, we need to do some work to protect ourselves from this issue because even longtermcare.gov, like the federal government, is telling us 2/3 of us will need some form of long-term care. For 20% of us, it'll be greater than 5 years. And now the state of Pennsylvania is telling you that skilled nursing costs $150,000 a month. Well, you add this stuff up, it's like, man, from my standpoint, this is the issue for retirees. And it's the issue that, you know, if I get sick relatively early, let's say I get sick in my 70s with dementia, my wife might live another 15 or 20 years. I want to make sure she has a house to live in and some money in the bank, and we can plan for that. And so I'm particularly fine for middle-class families who are concerned about this stuff to give some consideration to irrevocable trust planning as compared to the next question. So we started the show saying these are five common questions. One of the questions that we get all the time is, should I give my house to my kid? Well, usually my opinion is no, I don't like it. And I'm going to say a couple of reasons why I don't like it. But I find it to be too risky. And what do I mean by that? Well, if what we're trying to do, you know, people kind of have this general idea that if I give my house to my kids, maybe it protects it from this whole nursing home care issue. Yeah, maybe. It might. You get a 5-year look back period issue, but we got that with trusts too. But the main risk associated with transferring the house to the kids is it's loss of control, right? If I'm in theory giving my house to my kid in order to protect it from my potential nursing home issue, Now my kid owns my house. But haven't I just now exposed my house to my kid's potential issues? Like, what happens if my kid gets sick before me? What happens if my kid dies before me? What happens if my kid goes through a divorce? What happens if my kid gets sued because of a car accident? What happens, what happens, what happens, you know? So I don't know that it's always a great idea to transfer the place where we're supposed to live for the rest of our lives to someone else's ownership, even if it is our child. Because I don't know that I still have a good relationship with my child in 20 years. I don't know. I hope not, but I don't know that my child isn't having health issues or gambling issues or drug issues. I don't know that. And so therefore, I'm not giving up control of my house. I do want to protect it from long-term care expenses, but that's why we use trust to accomplish that rather than giving away the house. The other thing, and it happens to be related to this whole issue, right? So our top five questions, the next two coming are, what are the tax ramifications of all of this? And then how do you get through the five-year look-back period? So let's talk about the tax ramifications. One of the reasons, I would say the second biggest reason why you probably don't want to give your house to your kid is because when you do so, they take your tax basis in the house, all right? So let me explain what I'm talking about here. This is capital gains tax. I own a house. This is hypothetical. But let's say I bought a house in the year 1995 in Cranberry Township for $100,000. Okay, Cranberry has exploded. That house is probably now worth $300,000-$400,000. So let's just say $300,000. So I bought it for $100,000. Today it's worth $300,000, which means I have a $200,000 capital gain. Now, if I ever sell my house, if it's my primary residence at that level, I'm not paying any taxes because of a thing called the 121 exclusion from the capital gains tax, where there's big exemptions for the sale of the primary residence from the capital gains tax. However, if I give my house to my kid and I'm still living there, my kid has their own house, and then sometime later we need to sell the house. Well, I don't own it anymore. My kid owns it. And even if my kid is a good kid, let's say I need to go to independent living later on. I can't live in this house. I can't do the steps. I can't take care of it anymore. I want to sell it. And I want to use the sales proceeds to pay for my next living arrangement, which might be in an independent living facility. Well, now it's my kid selling the house. And now my kid owns it for $100,000 because my kid took my basis in the house when I gave it to them. So the kid owns it for $100,000. The kid sells it for $300,000. The kid's going to recognize a $200,000 capital gain, which could be taxed as high as like 18%. So that's a $36,000 tax mistake because we transferred our house to the kid when we should have probably used a trust where we didn't make that tax mistake. So that's one of the tax ramifications of this whole thing, and something to be very cognizant of, because if we can structure a trust where we protect it from long-term care expenses and not make that tax mistake, then now we've hit two goals that I think most retirees probably have, is avoid tax mistakes, protect it from long-term care. The other thing to know about that capital gains tax, folks, is when I pass away, I said I bought the house for $100,000, it's now worth $300,000. If I give it to my kid during my life, my kid owns it for what I owned it for. That's $100,000. So then whether they sell it while I'm alive or later, they're going to have to recognize the gain. $300,000 sales price, less $100,000 basis, $200,000 gain. If, however, that house is still in my Social Security number, when I pass away, still then in my taxable estate, we get a thing called stepped up tax basis, which means the kids then don't own it for $100,000 because they inherited it rather than receive it as a lifetime gift. Now they own it for date of death value. So now my kid owns that house for $300,000. My kid is free to sell that house for $300,000. He owns it for three, he sells it for three, no gain, no tax, right? So now we've avoided the capital gains tax entirely. And so something to be real cognizant of. Now that what I just described would leave it subject to the inheritance tax, but the capital gains tax is usually a bigger hit. So something to be thinking about, you know, and here's the thing with taxes. People are so concerned about taxes. The reality of this is that taxes are a thing we need to be aware of. Taxes are a thing we need to be smart about. But for most middle-class families, you're not going broke because of death taxes. Pennsylvania's death tax, if you're leaving stuff to the kids, is only 4.5%. Well, by definition, then we're not going broke. We're losing 4.5%. You know, and somebody lost 4.5% in the market in the last month anyhow, right? So, I'm not trying to say it's not an issue, but it is not the issue. The issue is what happens if I need a nursing home for $150,000 a year for 5 years. That's the issue, right? Okay. One more thing I want to chat about. Our next most commonly asked question, whether it's in our workshops or when folks are in the office, is explain that whole five-year look-back thing. Great. Let's talk about the five-year look-back period. So I was saying earlier in the show that long-term care, if I need a nursing home, Medicare doesn't pay for long-term care stays in the nursing home. The only agency that does is Medicaid. But Medicaid has means-tested programs, right? Meaning they look at your money to determine if you're eligible. Now, we use certain types of trusts that after 5 years, they can't ask you about that money anymore. They have a five-year look-back period. So if you ever find yourself in the unfortunate position of asking, of applying for Medicaid for long-term care for yourself or for a loved one, on the application it says, have you transferred anything away in the last 5 years? Which presents a planning opportunity if we've done our planning ahead to say no. We transferred it more than 5 years ago. You're not allowed to ask me about more than 5 years ago, and so now the stuff is in the trust, right? If we get through the five-year look-back period, the stuff in the trust is protected. What happens if you don't make it through the next 5 years? Well, then in that instance, let's say you do this type of planning, and in our office, we divide our clients into really two different categories, pre-planners, in what we call crisis management, because to most middle-class families, 150 grand a year is a crisis, right? So we got our pre-planners and we got our crisis. When people call our office and they're in a nursing home today, that's a crisis. We didn't plan 5 years ahead. When people call our office 5 years ahead or more and do planning ahead of time, then we put a plan in place more than 5 years. We're good on those assets, right? But what happens in the middle? What happens in the middle? Well, if we set up a trust for somebody and they don't happen to make it 5 years, well, they just became a crisis case, right? So there's this entirely different set of tools that we didn't talk about on this show that we can use to protect assets even after someone is in a nursing home, right? And so there's always a paddle. You know, I've heard the phrase that people are going to be they're concerned they're going to be up the creek without a paddle. There's always a paddle. We just need to – this is why it's called planning. This is why it's not a transaction. This is why we're not trying to shove some document down your throat. We need to have a plan for what happens if. What happens if I never go to the nursing home? What happens if I go more than 5 years ago? What happens if I go less than 5 years from now? How are we going to respond to that type of situation? What is our tax strategy? What is our long-term care strategy? And I know this stuff, folks. I know it's not fun to think about. But this is how the game is won. The game is won with a game plan. The game is not won to go to the field to find out what sport we're playing today. You're going to lose that game. You have to understand the rules of the game beforehand. And that is why we offer so many educational programs. That's why I'm doing this radio show today. That is why we host our workshops that you can register for free, where you come in and we teach you the rules of the game. This is how the game is played. You can decide if you want to play or not. You don't have to retain our law firm. You can decide if you want to play the game, but the game is being played whether you want to play it or not. The government rulebook doesn't care if you plan ahead. The government rules are the government rules. Now, if you play ahead, if you learn the rules of the game, there are opportunities to win the game. But if you say, I understand there's a game, I just don't want to play it, well, then you can expect to lose the game. That's how it's always going to go, right? And so at the what we call our Three Secrets to Protect Your Legacy workshop, we teach you a lot of the rules. And then we have additional educational programming after that workshop to teach you some of the other rules, right? And the education never stops. To us, you're not a transaction. You are a relationship. The laws will change. Your goals will change. When the laws change and when the goals change, the plan needs to change. And that's why we have monthly educational sessions, monthly social sessions, so that you know that you have engaged a law firm that cares whether the plan works. We're not just trying to sell you some set of documents and forget your name. That's not how we do business. And so I hope that that what I'm saying today makes some sense to you. I hope that you learned something. And if you want to learn more, go to secklerlawfirm.com, S-E-C-H-L-E-R lawfirm.com and register for one of our upcoming estate planning workshops. They're free. If you need the phone number, it is 724-841-1393. We regularly host workshops in Cranberry, South Point, Ross Township, Butler. We're hosting Newcastle. We're hosting these workshops all over the place because it seems that people all over the place are concerned about this stuff. So if you go to our website, you'll find those. You can register for free. We'll teach you all the things you need to know to protect yourself, to protect your money, to protect your family, and provide a better future. I mean, that's sort of the goal. I hope that by listening to today's show, you learned some stuff. I hope you found it valuable. I encourage you again, do not make any decisions based upon what you heard on this or any other radio show. This stuff is complicated. Don't try to do it alone. If you need legal advice, you need to reach out to a lawyer. We're available anytime at SechlerLawFirm.com, S-E-C-H-L-E-R, lawfirm.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you here next week.
This has been the Life and Legacy Show, sponsored by the Sechler Law Firm, where great families make great plans. SechlerLawFirm.com or call 724-841-1393.